Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Heather.
Hi,
we're on the air. Hello, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. We're the show that gets you your spirits up and your information flowing. We are the three divas, and we are three women, three ways, and we're the ones who are going to talk this week about a very special topic, a topic that's very close to my heart. But first, let's meet our co-hosts. Deborah?
Hey, good morning, and lovely Saturday to you, Heather, and all of our listeners.
And this is Pinkley, Connie Sue, and a good morning, afternoon.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you happen to be. And, of course, before we get started, let's say, you know, give us a call, and we'd like to hear what you have to say about this very, very interesting topic. The phone number for call-in is 646-378-0430, or you can go to our webpage and click chat, and we can get an email from you while we are on the air, and we'll be giving that number and that email as we go along. Our topic this week, as I said, is one that's near to my heart. It's about domestic violence. And whenever people hear about domestic violence, it seems like the first question they ask is, "What, ladies? Why doesn't she just leave?" Yes, exactly. And, of course, ladies know that I wrote a book about this topic called Why Doesn't She Just Leave? Real Women, Real Stories, A New Perspective on Domestic Violence. And shameless plug here, it's available on Amazon.com. And the topic of this book is Why Doesn't She Just Leave? I wish I had a dollar for every time I've heard somebody describe to me a domestic violence situation followed by, "I don't understand, why doesn't she just leave?" Yeah. Have you heard that, ladies?
All the time.
Every time we bring up the subject of domestic violence, and since, you know, I'm an advocate and an activist and everything else, and plus with my family, I bring it up on a daily basis, and I still hear it after almost 20 years of being in this field of work.
Oh, and Pinkley, I'm sure you've heard it.
Well, I've heard it many, many times, yes. And actually, I think that we all have different perspectives on this. And maybe there's a quote that you could read out of the book that you have stories gathered from, Heather.
Well, I would be happy to do that. Right now, I just wanted to start off by saying exactly why it bothers me to hear that phrase. Okay?
Yes.
It bothers me because they're talking about domestic violence, and they're talking about something bad happening to a woman, maybe her family. So why are they asking, why does he do it, instead of asking, why doesn't she just stay? Or just leave. Why don't they ask, why doesn't he leave? He's the one that's doing some bad stuff here. Or she, you know, there is a 3% chance it could be woman domestic perpetrator. But nobody ever says, why not him? And so by asking, why not her, they put the need for action in the woman's court and make it her problem.
Yes. Heather, what another aspect of this whole conversation that really gets under my skin is that there's a statistic that says survivors of domestic violence do leave. They actually leave an average between 7 and 9 times before it becomes a more permanent thing for them. So
yeah.
I say we do leave. Survivors do leave. It's not easy, and there's a lot of context around it. But particularly is, why does she have to leave? Does the survivor have to leave? Why can't the abuser be the one to leave the home and have the family be secure in the family home?
Yeah, when you stop and think about it, you've got this whole family. You've got a woman, the children. They're the ones that are supposed to pack up and move somewhere that they've never been before, but he gets to stay there? What's wrong with that picture? Well, in the book, go ahead, Deborah.
No, I agree. I really appreciate the anthology that you edited, And one of the things I appreciate most about the anthology that you edited, Heather, is the fact that almost 90% of the people that worked on your anthology were indeed survivors of domestic violence.
Yeah. Yeah, they were. And, of course, that's the whole story of the book. We've got the research thrown in there, but we're not inundating people with research. We just threw in enough so that people who read it know that, you know, this one story is not unique, that, in fact, this happens a lot in this kind of situation. So basically what we did in our book is we outlined some of the reasons, and they basically fall into economics, legal, and social. A woman who has no place to go, a woman who has no social support, perhaps she has a religion where they really encourage women to stay, or perhaps she has parents who are saying, well, it takes two, you know, everybody contributes to this. She's not getting the social support she needs to help her make that move. So basically what she's doing is living in an untenable situation. She doesn't see a way out, and her friends and family are contributing to her staying. And then other people.
Go ahead. I was going to say, part of the family contributing to the survivor staying there is that they have a lack of knowledge and information. You know, a lot of times family feels inadequate in how to respond to it. They also may feel some anger that this is happening to someone that they love. There may be also anger towards the survivor for staying, because after all, the answer is to just leave, you know. So there's a whole lot of things that we need to work on as a community and as a nation and a world.
Well, and I also think that the just leave part, if people are aware on, and I think most of us are aware socially, that there is this service, quote unquote, for people who need to leave or flee or get away. And there's a shelter, right, for domestic violence. We don't most communities have that. So I think that there's an undertone or an someone's implying, but it's not really said, well, if you just leave and go to that shelter, that domestic violence program, if you go there, when you leave from that place or when you go there, everything will be okay.
Yes. And that's the end of it.
And that's the end of it. So for our listeners, I work for a domestic violence program, and we do wonderful, wonderful work. It involves, which most programs have, our shelters, our helpline, resources, support groups. But it's also very, very challenging for people to really come in and get all of the services they need. Most people have to start over when they leave. So
exactly.
For our listeners, I think it's really important, if you are supporting someone or if you know someone, that you ask, how can we support you? How can the abuse stop? That the question is really lent towards the person who's doing the harm, and giving services and support for the person who's being harmed in a way that doesn't have to include uprooting themselves or their family, work, school.
Yeah.
It's really
and
quite
this might. Fun. Yeah, this might be a good place to read one of the stories from one of the women in our book. She said, when I did separate from my abuser, we then became homeless and poor. I had little or no credit, little or no money, limited work experience and work history, and a minimal support system. We lost our personal belongings like clothing, furnishings, memorabilia. This caused financial needs to replace the missing items. And many families who leave don't have an automobile because they don't have the money to pay for it or make the payment or buy the gasoline or the insurance. And that abuser probably knows that. As a matter of fact, Deborah, I'm sure you know that a lot of times money is the weapon that's used to abuse women.
Absolutely. And it was really the key factor in my personal situation, because I know I'm one of those who left, and I'm one of the statistics that says, survivors leave 7 to 9 times. I counted it up, and I did leave 9 times. I kind of try to liken it for people to get a a feeling of what it was for me and my children to go through it, like strengthening a muscle. I would leave and come mm-hmm. back. But when I came back, I would say, okay, now I know this is what I have to do in order to take care of myself. So, so I'd keep going and coming. And each time I left, I got a little bit stronger and I'd stay away a little bit longer and
yeah.
be able to see that whole cycle, the manipulation piece that was being applied to me when I was away from the
yep.
children's father, the abuser. And
yeah.
so it's like strengthening a muscle. And the economic thing is what kept me tied for 17 years.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. One of the things that really bugs me is that what you talk about, the repetitive attempts to leave. When people, outsiders who don't understand the dynamic of domestic violence, see a woman leave and then go back, leave and then go back, it's like they're in their minds, it's like, well, see, she likes it. She keeps going back. She likes being abused. And we've heard
yeah.
that before, when in fact the analogy that I always like to make is the statistics show it takes 7 to 10 tries to quit smoking.
Right.
Well, if it takes that much effort to figure out how to quit smoking and adjust your life accordingly, why on earth should it be expected to take less time to adjust your life to a situation where you're leaving an abuser, you're leaving your home, you're ripping your children away from what they know, and you're going into this unknown void.
Right. And I can certainly see how, and then in that case, it appears that it's almost like an addiction to being hurt. But
yes.
it's not an addiction so much as it's a social and cultural expectation that we have a two-parent family and we live in the house with the white picket fence.
Yep.
So when whoever is leaving or separating, there's additional guilt upon that person for dismantling that perfect perception of their family. And
yep.
But the public and society doesn't see that. They see that as you're being, mean-spirited and you're not living within the standard norms and all those things. I noticed that Connie Sue said that she thinks everybody knows that there are services, but I want to tell you that when I separated from my abuser, I did not know there was a place like the YWCA, Safe Choice Domestic Violence Program in Vancouver, and my family certainly didn't know. But so, Pinkley, you knew about it, and what was your what was the response you got when you reached out for help?
Well, I wasn't, and yeah, thank you for clarifying that. There is an assumption that everybody knows, and not everybody does know. But from what I did know, it was little glimpses maybe on the media. This happened to be during the time when I left of the Nicole Simpson, Nicole Brown murder, and which happened down in L.A. Quite a few years ago. So you're right, not everybody does know, but there was something along the way that I gleaned from whatever I knew that there was this quote-unquote shelter or services. And I can also say when shelters went, like the program that I work for in Thurston County, oftentimes we're full. We can't always take people in.
Yeah.
And so there's, what we call safety planning or planning for your safety, because we will always ask, are there other places that you can stay or go if you're deciding to leave? And the question that I'm really asking us to present is, what other options are there? What would it be like for you to stay and go into another direction of maybe getting the person out of the home and whatnot? And I also think that it's really important for our listeners to realize that in the many attempts that someone may leave, that there's also the potential of what we call escalation violence, the likelihood of the violence increasing. And becoming more lethal, it goes up by 75%.
Yep.
So can you imagine that you have made a decision for whatever that looks like for you, to know that if you do leave, that you're potentially in more danger?
Yeah.
So
think just just think about the news stories that we've seen where a woman is killed, sometimes the children are killed, and if you follow those news articles all the way to the end, usually somewhere in there it says she just got, she just filed for divorce, or she just, tried to leave. And there's a very, I remember being in a store once and somebody was talking to me about domestic violence, and they said, well, I don't know, she doesn't leave, and I said, well, has she told you why she isn't leaving yet? And the woman said, oh, well, she thinks it's dangerous to leave. And I went, it is.
Yeah.
It is dangerous.
Yeah. Welcome to our world. It is extremely dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, we have a couple of people on our chat line, and I don't see their questions typed out yet. They just are listening, so I'd encourage them to type out their questions for us. And don't forget that we want to hear from you on this issue. The phone number, 646-378-0430. 646-378-0430. Because we know that you must have some questions or experience with this. So please, let us know what's going on for you and what you're thinking about. Well, one of the other topics that we were talking about clearly was the economic, but now we're talking about safety. And I think it's really important, Pinkley, and you brought it up, that we know that it's not, okay, she walks out the door and then everything is hunky-dory. And if I could, I'll just read another little couple sentences from one of our other stories in the book. I finally left after 11 years, but with the knowledge that wherever I go, he would be out to get me. I live in, and she names the state, and he is in another state. I'm still dealing with him on legal issues he keeps bringing up. I am in a position of not being able to afford to help to get my agreed-upon medical coverage, so once again, he reaches out his hand at me. So even when you do leave, it's not over.
Yeah, and I think that it's important, too, for our listeners to realize that, and this may seem hard to understand, but when you are in a situation where you're having to make even this decision, how complicated is that? You don't go into a relationship or to a marriage or have children with ever the thought of, oh, I know someday I'm going to have to leave because of domestic violence. You're always hoping that people will change, get better. And I think that the key issue here is that in a situation like this, we learn survivor skills. You learn how to survive in a relationship on some level. And I always check with the person that I may be advocating with is that you know this person better than anyone. But by not asking that, does that question imply I'm asking to predict their behavior? But you know the situation better than any person, and what would it look like for you to leave? What would that situation look like? Do you think this person would follow you, or so there's a, on some level, if you're in a relationship, you have learned the status quo and whatever that is. You know when the violence could potentially escalate or de-escalate, or you go into the honeymoon phase. And if you leave that situation, what has happened is you have upset the status quo. So just, and I really want to be clear about this with our listeners, just because you do leave does not always mean that the abuse will stop. There's so many other forms in which the control. And like this one example of a story, it's either through legal, economic, social. You end up being sometimes even more isolated because your friends and family don't understand what you've done. Or you have to go into a place where you have to cut all of those family ties because it's not safe. It's not safe for you to have people around you.
Well, and I this is Deborah. I think that safety and thinking about those kinds of things also leads to a really huge institution that impacts the survivor's ability to get safe, and that's the legal system. We depend rather heavily on the legal system. And I know in my particular relationship, I never applied for a protection order or went through any of those processes. The ex was never arrested. And we went through a divorce. And the funny thing that's really unique about my situation is the abuser just left, and it's like he forgot we existed. So that's kind of unique to my situation. However, he did continue to harass me through, what am I spending the child support money on?
Oh, well, yeah. That's always a big one.
Right. And then you're not being a good mother. I'm going to take the kids away from you. Those kinds of threats. So I had, after we left, I was 17 years married. And then the next 8 years, till the youngest of my four kids was 18, he continued to harass me on those two aspects. And, I mean, it was really pretty hard. But I remember throwing a big party when the youngest turned 18, because I says, woo! I'm finally free.
Yep, exactly. Well, and I think people.
But I know that we've had different legal experiences. Why don't you share a little about those?
Oh, wow. I didn't even know where to start with that one, Deb.
Tell them the story about what your attorney told you, if you don't mind.
Oh, I was just, for listeners out there, just reminiscing a little bit with Deb, and I left in 97, basically with nothing except a dog and a car. But what was I saying? The attorney that I went and saw basically said, don't worry about your things. You will have so much effing money. And, you know, it was all about the money. It was all about the power and control. So basically what I discovered is, unfortunately, I walked away from someone who was very controlling and abusive and emotionally and financially manipulative into the hands of an attorney who
was all of that
plus. And so I thought that was normal. I thought that was normal behavior. I was so groomed and had no self-esteem left, no sense of wherewithal of my own personal self, that I had lost everything of who I was.
What do you think about that, Heather, an attorney promising her she's going to get all the money she needs? I don't think that sounds ethical.
No, well, I don't think so either, but I'm not
Sorry
an attorney.
One of one, her, but someone did it to her.
the one thing that I do know is that if you have the money for an attorney, which in case you're lucky, you do. But even if you have the money for an attorney, that attorney is working for you. He will work harder, or she, depending on the payout. So if you're not worth a lot of money, that attorney is not going to work as hard for you as he would for, you know, Mrs. Gottrocks, because there's more potential in it for that attorney. And I think sometimes women are so desperate when they leave these situations that they think that attorney is going to save them. They think that going to court is going to save them. And in fact, it's a whole new ball game not controversy, but conflict that you have to deal with.
And
you
like
have to remember.
Right?
Yes, it is. It is. And, you know, I've often said that, you know, how sometimes new mothers get doulas for their first few weeks of new baby, you know, new motherhood. I think we should have DV doulas for women who are going through this process. You know, because you're so stunned, your life has just been in a total uproar, you know, and what I always call it is like you're suspended by a spider web over some chasm. And when you finally decide on that final leaving, you've clipped the spider web, and you have not a clue what's under you.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
So you not only have the fight with the attorneys and have to be sharp and realize that, you know, they're human beings too. And the more difficult your spouse is or the abuser is, the more likely that attorney is going to want out at some point. The other thing is that if you do go to court, and chances are you will go to court because abusers are controllers, and if they have no other way of controlling you, they will try to control you through the courts.
Yeah.
So as you pointed out, Deborah, it's like, well, I I picked up my daughter, and she didn't have a coat, so I had to go buy her a new coat. And what is this woman doing with my child support? You know, I mean, it's always something that they're trying to keep that control of you.
You know,
I know.
Heather,
go ahead.
Heather, I think the one thing that that I want to share with our listeners, and I understand that the legal system is about justice, and
no.
The lady justice who wears a blindfold, and then it is supposed to be equal. And I don't, I would encourage anyone, I mean, basically from my experience, all I wanted was someone to say, I'm giving you justice by saying, yes, this person was controlling and mean and abusive. It wasn't about any money. It wasn't about I was looking for justice. I wanted validation. And
did you get that, Tinkley?
Hell no. And if
I know.
And if somebody turns around and just says, for our listeners, and I'd like to have you give out the numbers for our listeners, too, in case someone left some support, is that the best thing that you can say to someone if they're experiencing this or you're suspicious or you are approached is this is not about your behavior. This is not your fault.
Yeah.
And you do not deserve this, and you need and should be and deserve to be treated equally with respect and love and compassion.
Yeah. I just wanted to say one more thing about the courts. I think that your understanding that a court is a place where you go to get justice is a very common one. And a court is not about justice. A court is about law. And that law is interpreted by the man or woman who's wearing the robe. So
right.
All of their background comes...
So
It can be. And from my experience, courts often operate, Pinkley, you mentioned that idea that, you know, we have to have two parents. Well, I support that, unless one parent is a bad, bad parent. And then I don't see where it does a child any good to have a bad parent. The courts operate under the notion that kids need two parents. Even if the other parent has been abusive, they don't necessarily believe that that abuse has or will occur to the children, which we all know is not true. They also operate under the notion that a father has a right to his children.
Mm-hmm.
Well, really. And then the third operative that they work under is she lies. She lies.
Yeah.
She's hysterical. She lies. Yeah.
Yeah,
I want to give out the hotline number here, Pinkley. It's 1-800-799-7233. That's 800-799-SAFE. Now, that's a national hotline number for if you think you're being abused and you're not sure, if you are not sure how to get out of the situation, if you're not sure whether you need some resources, or even if you are sure, call this number and they will direct you to the nearest facility, nearest helpline, nearest place for you to go to get some assistance where you are. So 800-799-SAFE.
Very good. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I heard a quote from Maya Angelou who said, the best thing a father can do for his children is to love their mother.
Yep.
Wouldn't it be a beautiful world if we all got that? Yeah.
Absolutely.
No kidding. Yeah, I'll tell you, this is such a huge, huge topic, and that whole topic about the courts, that's a whole topic in itself, and unfortunately in our book we have a very, very sad story about a woman who's gone to court, and maybe we could make that another show, but for now, I want to mention that the shameless plug again, Amazon.com, and it's Heather Stark, and the name of the book is Why Doesn't She Just Leave? And I'd be real happy if you got it. And if you get it, pass it on. Pass it on to a shelter. Pass it on to a neighbor. It's designed for people who don't have a lot of experience with domestic violence issues, and it's designed to help you understand what's going on with this woman.
Yes, good book. Teachers and professors use it. And it's nice to read for family members, too.
Yeah, it is. It is. I'm in awe of some of these women. So, Pinkley, you want to wrap it up here for us?
Well, I think, thank you, listeners. We are three women.
Three ways.
Three divas.
Goodbye. Join us next week.